Trombonist, one of the greatest of all time, as a matter of fact, with Bluesette. It is the title track of his 1959 album. See, when you do things well, they last. That's what I like about old music. Benny Golson on tenor sax, Tommy Flanagan on piano, Jimmy Garrison on bass, and Al Hayward on drums, a fine collection of musicians. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we are going to be talking as political analysts today. That is, you're going to be talking as political analysts today. And we'll be talking about Venezuela. The Pope even got in on the action yesterday, saying that he is terrified of a bloodbath in Venezuela. And he did not pick sides. He's not saying that he favors the government, and he's not saying that he's with the opposition and supporters of the opposition, which includes the United States. All he said, and his remarks were directed to, in his view, a building up of indications that Venezuela is headed for a bloodbath. This is not good. Not good news at all. And still, we see from the United States a revving up of pressure against the Venezuelan government and the president of Venezuela. And we don't see any backing down. You don't see any attempt at all to reconsider the U.S. actions. We see only that there is an acceleration, an intensification of the tensions when there is room, even though, of course, we know already, we are clear that U.S. actions against the Venezuelan government have exacerbated things to the point where inevitably it will lead to an explosion. There is no attempt here to really try and do something while there, even with a little sliver of time. that they can try and get something done in the way of bringing this, de-escalating the tensions. And if they don't take advantage even of a sliver of time, this little space, it is inevitable that there will be a major explosion, a major conflagration, and it will possibly involve probably half of the world, at least. Certainly it's going to involve all the nations of Central and South America. We have the United States, and that's the question that we're going to be talking about. Why is the United States, this is where I'm asking you to put on your analyst hat, why is the United States a principal actor in the crisis in Venezuela? Why is it occupying such a space? What is the reason for the U.S. involvement in Venezuela? And do we just accept it, or do we do something? If so, what do we do as concerned citizens, concerned people? Because, you know, we're also talking not only about conventional warfare. We cannot discount the possibility of nuclear warfare and other kinds of warfare that will have lethal effect. Just to recap the scenario here, we have a country that is being assailed first from the inside and then from the outside, but we are not naive enough to believe that they're not connected. The turmoil within Venezuela clearly has been provoked by interests and parties outside of Venezuela supporting what's going on in Venezuela. For a long time, there has been a tension in Venezuela, and we will get into that when we ask our guests to come in and tell us about what we're seeing. And you see it. You see it. You see what's going on. You see the old clashes resurfacing between a white, or this is what they see themselves as, a white power elite refusing to yield to a mixed race control. Some of you may remember that it was very, very much the case when Hugo Chavez was president of Venezuela that he was called mono, meaning monkey. It wasn't just that there was a disagreement with his ideology and political philosophy, which both shaped the economic approach of the Chavez government. But it was also, and this was never really openly discussed, certainly not within, not outside the country of Venezuela. But when the opposition affixed the name or the nickname Mono to the president of the country, Mono, as I said, meaning monkey, this is the attitude that also plays a major role in the development of this political schism in Venezuela. Who is to rule this country? Who is entitled to rule? Who is entitled to have power? Who is entitled to dominate? And here comes Chavez, and Chavez takes a populist approach, a socialist approach, a leftist approach, and we see the resistance building even then, and certainly before then. There is a white power elite bolstered by the white power elite outside of Venezuela. Now, they have cast it as a political fight within Venezuela that came out of discord over how the nation was being run. But buttressing all of that was a belief that the country and the world, really, should be run by white people. That is a fundamental, although not stated, belief. It is understood that when you have a situation where in a country that used to be a vassal state of a European colonial power, the assumption also is that leadership, political leadership, is to reflect that racial belief, that racial connection. Yes, the colonial power did accede, as it were, to independence, but that doesn't mean that they're giving up power over their former territory. And then to have it come to be that the power that emerges is a descendant of the very people who were enslaved, who were killed in genocides, who were put to slave labor and so forth. It doesn't go well with their former colonial masters. It just does not go well. And so that, we cannot ignore, is at the base of a lot of the acrimony. And that is continuing in a revival of the power relationship that the former rulers not only desire, but insist on. They must rule. So here we have, in the current situation, you have a 35-year-old opposition leader. 35! He clearly doesn't know everything about running a country. One could question his credentials as much as they question anybody else's credentials. Yet, he has been anointed, as young as he is, as inexperienced as he is at this level, he has been anointed as the leader. And we see the world literally falling into lockstep with that mentality. That's what's going on. And we cannot ignore it. We just can't ignore it. It is right there in front of our eyes, and they're telling us that that's not the problem. It doesn't even enter the discussion, they say. We're talking about serious political problems here, and here you come injecting the issue of race and class. And now we're calling on our allies, as the United States has begun to do and has been doing, to, as President Trump said a few days ago, to take sides. What does that really mean? To take sides. We had the a groundswell of opposition globally when Hugo Chavez took office. Now, his protege, who also is of mixed race, is in office, and there was even an assassination attempt already. But the same mentality of when Chavez was called Mono has been transferred to Nicolas Maduro. He is the new Mono. Now, if you notice, if you've been following the situation so far, none of this has come up as a major factor or even a minor factor in what is going on in Venezuela and how the world community now is aligning itself along a very not so healthy past as colonial people, as who conducted genocidal campaigns throughout Central and South America. They haven't forgotten that they are committed to the propagation of white supremacy. I'm not discounting the fact. Let's be clear. I'm not discounting the fact that there are political, serious political differences. But look what has been given to us to deal with. We have a country that has openly professed, the United States has openly professed the destruction of Maduro's regime. A coup has in fact been not only attempted, but has been successful, I would say, insofar as it has divided the nation. It has now brought the matter to a point of the military, which is one of the only saving factors here, that the military has not yet fully capitulated. It is still supporting Maduro, at least to this point. It has created an untenable situation. It has essentially, the United States has placed sanctions on one of the main earners of revenue for Venezuela, which is oil. By so doing, it has destroyed and is still seeking to utterly destroy its economy, which is to render Venezuela ungovernable, to create conditions where the people will take charge of the attack on this government. It will not be resolved legislatively. The United States has now put it to its allies, like Britain and Canada and France and other nations to, again, as Trump said, take sides. They have taken the side of Trump in this matter. These are very serious developments. And we still have to ask the question, why is the United States, this is the question I want you to address today, why is the United States in the middle of this, in fact, leading the charge against Venezuela to cripple it and to get rid of its legitimately elected president, whether people like it or not? He is president of the United States. He's the president of Venezuela. And if there is to be some situation where the people decide to remove him, that is an internal matter. That is something that its own constitution provides for. So why can't you just leave a country, even in the midst of its catastrophe, political catastrophe, let it handle its business? If it needs your help, it certainly will let you know. But why do we insist on being a primary actor here in what everybody could agree, what most everybody, let me qualify that, what most everybody could agree is a tragic development in the course of a country, but we are just refusing to understand the genesis of it, and we are not asking for accountability on the part of the United States as to why. Why is it central now to this matter of Venezuela's crisis? Why is it a principal actor in the Venezuelan crisis? I'm asking you to just offer us some ideas, analytical ideas. What do you think is happening here? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And let's get started with, let's see who's on. Tony from Orlando, you're on the air.
Hi, Latrice.
Hi.
I think you pretty much explained the situation as far as the white supremacy aspect of the situation, which is what I believe is what has led up to this moment that we're seeing right now. The United States still treats most of Latin America and the Caribbean as bananic republics and colonies. They don't respect them as equal neighbors in the region. And that is the reason why a lot of these countries find themselves in the term, you know, between a rock and a hard place. You're either with the, U.S. imperialist, or you have to go to the other superpowers, which is Russia and China. And what's been happening is that a lot of these countries have been partnering with Russia and China. There's a lot of Russian and Chinese investments in South America right now. And it's getting a little too close to comfort for the U.S. and Venezuela in particular, because it has, I believe, one of the largest oil reserves in the world.
Okay.
Yes.
Tony is back. We lost you there for a moment.
Like I was saying, basically what we're witnessing is a proxy war between the United States and Russia and a little bit of China, and because what China and Russia have been investing a lot of money in South America, because like Pompeo said, he said you have to pick a side. So there's two basically sides in the world. So we're entering a new Cold War era, essentially. And what the United States is fearing is that there's a a heavy Russian and Chinese influence in the region. And that's due to their fault for, like what you were saying about as far as the whole racial aspect of it, of them not respecting our neighbors here in the Americas. Like, in my opinion, we should have an American union, like the European Union has a European union. We should be having an American union. But the United States, the white supremacists are not going to go for something like that. That would solve pretty much a lot of the problems, including the problem we're having at the border that they're saying we're having. That will solve that problem. But the problem is the white supremacists are not going to go for that. So these countries are faced with either being told what to do by the U.S., imperialists, or look elsewhere, which they are forced to do because the United States and the capitalists are squeezing them out of their money. So they have to find money and investments elsewhere. And who else has that money? It's countries like China. It's countries like Russia. Otherwise, they're gonna starve, and they're gonna make their lives miserable as long as possible until they break. And that's what we're seeing right now.
But it's all right. Thank you for getting us started. Thank you so much. 888-874-4888. We lost quite a few calls, but we get them back. If you call in again at 888-874-4888. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air. Why is the United States...
Good afternoon, Yatrice.
Hi. Why is the United States...
I see it as let's say fundamentally simple. This is a message to all the little countries throughout South and Central America, especially, that the United States of America is the empire, and the rest of you guys, you little countries, you have to understand that you are vassal states. And that's very simple. So states like Venezuela and some others like the Cuban state and whatnot, and a couple others. Point is, you got out of the line of the vassal states of the empire. That's the fundamental thing. And we have to get that to our heads. Now, in addition to that, the racial aspect is part of it too. When you go into these countries, and I've been in some of them, it seems like the lighter people have the biggest jobs, and it goes down as people get darker. That is part of it also. Now, for me, I would look at American people here that are in the continent of the United States and ask them, what are they getting out of this? Because the empire serves the interests of the ruling elite that runs the country, the Republicans, the Democrats, and the oligarchs, and the plutocrats that control those two parties. So what is the advantage that most of the people, especially half of the people that are poor and they're poor, are getting from this empire that is interested in just getting the resources, human and physical resources of all these countries? How is that benefiting the average person, the average poor person or near poor person living in this country? It doesn't. That is something that is in the interests of those who rule. So I think that people need to get that through their heads, that this is a situation, and when they look at the Congress, you know, the 535 and, 435 and the lower house and 100 in the upper house, and see where they stand. Are they doing what the people of this country need to do? Or are they doing what is in interest of the corporate ruling class that runs the country. And the answer to that, you just watch who gives them the money and how does that serve the interests of the masses of people in this country who are not benefiting by torturing Venezuela. I mean, it's a very thing, a very sad thing to see that the social, political, and economic warfare that is in effect, that's what sanctions are against the Venezuelan people. Why are we doing that? That's not in the interest of the people who live in this country. It's in the interest of overturning some vassal state that has gotten out of hand, according to what the ruling class, Republican and Democrat, say that it should be doing. So,
but why aren't we hearing, not a peep, from progressives and even leftists in Congress and just generally legislators in Congress, because this, the imposition of sanctions and so forth, to your knowledge, has any of this come up for discussion?
It shows you how corrupt this system is. You know, people label themselves leftists or, civil rights advocate and all the other kind of slightly left of center things. Some of them are pure phonies. They're phonies, and when the rubber hits the road, they back down. They're not going to say anything about what Trump is doing in Venezuela to any large degree. Where's the Black Caucus? What do they say? A lot of them are going to be just quiet. You know, the Republicans in the administration, they're doing this. A lot of the Democrats are not going to say anything about it. So, it shows you that we are living in a completely corrupt system, and most of the people in the Congress, in my opinion, are very susceptible to the oligarchs and ruling class that runs them and runs the Democrat Party, runs the Republican Party. And we got to get that through their heads. These people in this country, they don't understand that the Congress doesn't do what the people want. It does what the ruling class wants. And that's an important point. You know, you elect them, but that doesn't mean anything, because they're not going to put in the type of legislation that benefits all the people. They're not going to do that. They're going to do what their oligarch bosses tell them to do, one way or the other. Even though they can talk jive to you, they are going to perform in the service of those who rule. And we got to get that through our heads. And, that's basic analysis of what's going on. So people have to get it together. They have to understand how this system works.
Thank you so much, David, for your contribution today. Gwen from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, Trace.
Hi.
Oh, hi. I don't want to take up too much because I know that I spoke a lot about this yesterday, but you're asking some specific questions, and I wanted to give you some of the things I heard this morning. John Bolton got on the radio and said that this was a very good deal for the United States.
You have to identify John Bolton.
John Bolton is, oh, my God, okay. I forget his title, and I know his title. Sorry, just right now I'm blanking out. It's not that I don't know. It's a little bit of maybe senior moment. Now, I'm not a senior, but I do forget. But John Bolton went on to say that he thought this was going to benefit the United States in a great deal, because when our refineries took over the operations in Venezuela, this was going to be good for the United States, and not only good for the United States, but good for the people of Venezuela. They don't apparently know how to refine their own oil. Okay. I did hear a congressman speaking, and he's from California, and I think he's Muslim, and I can't remember his name either. But I did hear him speak out. Interestingly, I've only heard, I think, two people speak out about this in the Senate and Congress, and both of them, I believe, were of Muslim background. But it was kind of disappointing to hear him, too, because instead of speaking the truth and saying, you know, the real reason why this is a very bad thing was he spoke about, you know, the government not being that good, but he didn't approve of this. And to me, the biggest problem here is the outright thievery in the United States. It's not even the racism. It's the idea that, look, if I want something you have, I can go to your house and take it just because I want to take it. And so, you know, you need to be really careful because this kind of thinking at that level trickles down to everybody else. I mean, what are we going to do, start going into our neighbors' houses and helping ourselves to what they have? Because it does trickle down. But I think that for me, this is my biggest beef with all this, is that this is a sovereign country. They did have an election. It doesn't really matter whether you like their president or not because you don't live in their country. And if you live in their country, then you can go ahead and run for office and you can do whatever you need to do within the legal limits to change the government. But for another government to impose themselves upon a smaller government just because they can, possibly dragging us into World War III, is outrageous. And I think that the biggest outrage is not hearing just regular people in the United States have any anger about this or upset. They actually, I mean, we've been so conditioned here, or maybe I just didn't get it. We're so conditioned that we can just do whatever we want, that we don't even question the government anymore. And I don't actually think that this was always this way. I don't think it was at all. As a matter of fact, even as I said yesterday, when the Iraq War started, there were a lot of people that did protest. There was a lot of people that even went on TV that were on TV stations that spoke about it or against it or at least questioned it. Right now, there's no question. There's no nothing. It's just like you don't like it, so go over and fight. So the last thing I want to say about Maduro, as I expressed yesterday, I think, is that I am not sure that he won't capitulate. I don't really know if Russia and China are, if there hasn't been a deal behind the scenes with the United States that is allowing them to go on the record saying we're against this, but that everybody knows, you know, the United States is going to go in and take what they want, and I don't know if Russia or China will step up to the plate to help this country. So it will be interesting to see, but I think for me, as a citizen of the United States, the most troubling aspects about this are our own news stations, our own media, the sleeping at the wheel of just the everyday United States of America citizens, just regular people who either don't know anything about this or they just don't give a rat's butt about it and think that it won't touch their lives. But these things do touch our lives. You know, I got to tell you something that's really weird. Every time a Republican
Gwen, I just want to add on, because you raised John Bolton. He's a national security advisor to Donald Trump and apparently was pivotal in the most recent decision, which was to station U.S. troops now in Colombia. Okay,
right.
So there you go. That's John Bolton.
And also with John Bolton, I just want to also say this. He for years has wanted to do this, and he was very, very instrumental in the attack on Iraq. He is all about empire, and this is why for years he couldn't get into an office higher than where he was. But now he is there, and he's known to be very, very radical right. So he's driving the car.
Well, thank you for your contribution today. Thank you so much. And
thank you.
I agree with your analysis. I think you hit several marks. I think you hit several marks today. Thank you. Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
How you doing? Hello?
Hello.
Yes. Hello. Good afternoon, Yatrice. How you doing?
Okay, Ed. What are your thoughts?
I'm just a student of history. And what the American people don't know anything about history. I mean, a few of your callers hit on some points, but this has been the policy of this government for years. May I mention the Monroe Doctrine? Chile, Allende, Maurice Bishop, Grenada. I mean, come on. This is the United States policy to go through South America and the Caribbean like it's their backyard and do whatever they want to do. The Bay of Pigs, Castro, Cuba. Come on. I mean, wake up. This is what the United States does. And the only reason why it gets away with it is not only because it serves the corporate powers that run this unilateral monarchy or empire. It's because the American people stand and let it happen. This is nothing new. They were trying to kill Chavez. They have been mucking about in Central and South America under the auspices of anywhere from when Major Smedley Darlington Butler wrote War as a Racket. They've been meddling in for every excuse from of national security to stopping communism. And it's a load of crap. And it's always been a load of crap. You have no right to tell the people of the sovereign country who can rule them. You might not like them, but hey, you can't rule. Suppose Russia and China said, you know, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. We ain't going to acknowledge Donald Trump. What's that? You know what I'm saying? This president and this country is delinquent, is morally debased, and it's all coming to a head. And I'm telling you, it's going to fail. It's going to fall and it's going to fail.
So when you say it's going to fall, it's going to fail, what would that picture look like?
Well, you're starting to see it now. There's going to be people are going. There's an old saying. I'm a formerly incarcerated person, and there's an old saying you say in jail: pressure bust pipe. Pressure can make a diamond, but pressure bust pipe. And the pressure's coming. People are getting tired of this nonsense, and they're starting to wake up. And then once we hit a critical mass, this whole thing is coming. And I welcome it because it needs to come apart. It has no moral to it. There too many of the wrong type of people are rising to the top and are not seeing any recompense for their actions. And I tend to wonder. Martin Luther King said the arc of the universe tends towards moral righteousness. I wonder, unless you take action, it won't. I mean, a perfect example is who's sitting in the White House. He has no business being there.
It's shaping up now. We have one development today, which is the movement of U.S. troops into nearby Colombia. So that is an escalation. And that indicates that the United States is not interested in anything except capitulation by Maduro.
Yes. Well, that's the way it's always been. They did the same thing in Chile with Allende. They tried to do it in Cuba, but the Cuban people were strong enough and willing to resist. They've done it in El Salvador, Iran-Contra, the Sandinistas. I mean, come on. This is the formula. It's not even so much Donald Trump. It's the formula that this government uses to deal with Central and South America. And the only way it's going to stop is if the people get out in the streets. You got to start doing like the Yellow Jackets. We got to start doing like France. You got to get out there and scare these politicians should be afraid of the electorate, and they're not. Because they do what they want, when they want, how they want to do. And until there is fear of the electorate, until there are consequences for this wrong action, it's going to stay the same. I don't know how to do it. I mean, I try to involve myself in movements, go to protests. I've also worked with WBI years ago when Bernard White was there. Manhattan Neighborhood Network tried to get the news out because I believe education plays a crucial part in it because people could see the history and they could see this before, then they could see what's happening, and it wouldn't be such a surprise or a shock as many of your callers indicated. But as you know the history of this country, this is part and parcel of how they operate.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks for contributing so meaningfully to us today. Thank you. Steve from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, Utrice. Okay. I listen to Russian TV, which is basically my major source of news, because they're the only people that get you news. For instance, Chafee, who is a senator from Rhode Island, spoke yesterday and came down so hard against the United States, said that this is a problem that the Venezuelan people should solve themselves. We have no right being there. And he said a lot of other things, too. absolutely hates what's going on, a senator from Rhode Island. Did you hear about it? Apparently not. Why? They're listening to CNN or MSNBC. They tell you nothing. Also, Rand Paul was interviewed on RT television yesterday. Also came down heavily against the United States for all the reasons that we named today. So people are against it, yet don't hear it because the news is tied. It's not news anymore. It's crap. I even listened to NJR yesterday. The most horrible baloney news, you know. This is a failed state. The people are starving. Nobody combating what this guy said. The guy was just lying through his teeth. The main reason why Venezuela has collapsed economically is because we cut off access to the dollar, which is the instrument that's used by trading. But there are people out there doing it. You're just not hearing about it. What I suggest is people start listening to RT. Yeah, it's very pro-Russian, but they report the news, and you can hear what's right and what's wrong. You don't hear anything anymore, okay? So I'm just saying people should listen to RT, and maybe you'll get some more information that you're not getting now. There are people out there, even in the government, like Chafee, who are very much against what the United States is doing, okay?
Yes, but I think we can agree that on the whole, this matter has not reached public attention. It has not gotten it. And you are absolutely right.
Well, how are you going to get it if you listen to the main sources? You think the Times is putting that in? I mean, you know, CNN, it's garbage. You know?
I get your point. I get your point. So what, therefore, is our charge? We are in a situation. A major event is occurring right in our backyard, and it is threatening to blow up in a way that cannot easily be contained. What do you recommend, apart from media outlets that would tell you, give you more information?
I don't know what to recommend at this point. You know, I was always an activist. I've always been involved in these things. I always care about these things. And this includes my partner. You know, everybody says, Steve, you can't do anything about it. Stop getting yourself so upset. I think people are just unwilling, and I'm talking about people that know what's going on.
Uh-huh.
I am totally cynical about the whole thing at this point. And I only started to call you because, you know, it's just killing me, okay? You know, I'm
Thank
as bothered and
much.
Outraged as you are, you know. But I just don't see anything happening.
I understand completely. But thank
I
you,
mean, you know, it's very disheartening.
For putting us in front of your own sorrow at the moment and sharing with us what you think is useful information, and in fact it is. Thank you very much, Steve, for your call today. Henry from Chicago, it looks like you have the last call.
Hey, Truth, how's it going?
Okay.
All right. Three points about Venezuela. Number one, I think a previous caller had mentioned it about the oil. I see a big oil heist, just like in Iraq. I see them doing this in an attempt to steal their resources. In a way where it looks legal, but in a sense it's illegal to do all of this, but they make the public think that this is, you know, a fight for democracy, which is not really a fight for democracy when you look at it at a very close perspective. Second thing is you got a lot of the South American countries over the last couple of years have gone right politically, and one in particular, Brazil, who voted in their president. I can't remember his name, but he's very far to the right, huh?
Bolsonaro.
Yes, yes, and a lot Brazil and a lot of the other South American countries have gone right, whereas in the prime of Hugo Chavez, it kind of wasn't like that, with the exception of a couple of countries. In particular, Colombia has always been a U.S. ally, so we won't count them. But also, too, Maduro, even though he shares the political ideology of his predecessor, Hugo Chavez, he seems not to be very savvy politically on the international level, because a lot of South American some South American countries that used to be allies of Venezuela have now, supported this coup and have gone on to the, onto the side of the United States. So,
is that a function of his inadequacy, or is that something else that persuades them, because they're just following the power? They're siding with power. Their perception of power.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know much about Maduro outside of when he came into office. But obviously
he was a bus driver.
Oh well,
he was a bus driver, and he was under the wing, politically speaking, of Hugo Chavez, and he won widespread support. Because it was clear that Chavez had kind of given him the nod. Just because he was a bus driver it's no big deal. It really isn't a big deal. It's where his heart was. And it is about what he believed was the relationship, or should have been the relationship, between the power structure and the people. What do you do for people?
Yeah.
How does government serve its people?
Well, that kind of concerns me, because, with a guy like Hugo Chavez, from my understanding, he was a military guy, right? So
Chavez was a military guy, but being a bus driver wasn't the full resume of Maduro either. Maduro came through the ranks, and I say he was a bus driver. That's why he started. In other words, he was of the people and moved up the ranks.
Okay. Well, that it kind of bothers me the way he doesn't seem to be, diplomatic with his allies as Hugo Chavez, because obviously the United States was a power, much more powerful than Hugo Chavez, but apparently, he seems to keep them at bay, when it came to his country and his ability to run his country. And I disagree with the previous female caller that said that China wouldn't do anything. I disagree, because China's investment in Venezuela is the biggest in South America, and I don't think they want that investment destroyed like that.
Well, it is a challenge, however you look at it. You have the basic question of the right of sovereignty. Who has a right to take another country's sovereignty? That's a basic question. And if it is to be challenged, who has the right to challenge it? We know that the United States and Britain and Canada and France and whoever else is in there backing Donald Trump, the idea is that on every level, this should be objectionable. Not just objectionable, this should be actionable. You should not have and sit by passively while this kind and level of aggression is shown. Would Trump tolerate it if somebody were to say, hey, look, we don't like you, just get up tomorrow and say, we have a change of plan. Mm-hmm. We have Joe Busby over here. He's our guy. You got to go. Do you think that would go down easily?
Mm-mm. No.
No, not at all. It is a mark
of this administration that it somehow has succeeded in shutting people up and then shutting them down. There's no great outcry, and there ought to be, because it doesn't matter whether it's Venezuela or Colombia or Barbados or any other country. This is not supposed to be our conduct as a nation. You don't do this thing. And we see no resistance from Congress to speak of. Yeah, you have one person here and one person there expressing outrage. But I'm talking as a legislative body that is supposed to safeguard our Constitution, which says you can't do this, that is supposed to rein in an obviously maniacal president who thinks he could do whatever he wants to do when he wants to do it, and imperiling people left, right, and center, and doesn't care. They've all laid down and let him roll over them. This is an amazing thing to witness.
Yeah, this opposition is very silent with Venezuela. It's not like with Iraq, where you at least had about 10% of the political leadership speaking out against it. And like you said, there's maybe one or two people, but it is not even 1% of the political leadership speaking out against this.
So this should cause us to take immediate action and call to account this legislative body called Congress. Because this is not the only situation in which they have messed up royally by doing nothing. Thanks a lot, Henry, for your call today. And that brings us to the end of our program. We will continue this because it should be continued. There's a lot happening here, and we need to expose it, and we need to discuss it and understand it. We'll see each other tomorrow. Thanks for listening and for contributing.